So have you ever wondered what it's like to lay in a bed speechless? I'm talking intensive care, machines beeping, your life is in jeopardy, and you can't ask a single word on what is happening. This is exactly what happened to Vanessa Abraham. She was feeling all right on a Thursday, not feeling so well on a Friday, and by Sunday she was an inpatient in an ICU setting and she was speechless. So welcome to Vanessa Abraham. She is the speechless SLP and she's writing a book for our profession and for the world to read about what it's like being speechless. So she's agreed to be part of the series here on the Missing Link for SLPs podcast, and her series is going to be called The Speechless SLP. I'm so excited because all of these episodes are going to unroll with different guests. Vanessa is our primary guest of honor, our main guest of honor for four of the episodes, and all of the other remaining episodes, we're going to be talking with her doctor, her mother, her husband, her nurses, other speech pathologists. So it's a really exciting series, and I'm so glad you're here as she offers such valuable insight. But let me tell you just a little bit about Vanessa's journey so you have a little bit of a background on who she is. Vanessa is a wife, mother, and a school-based speech language pathologist. She learned firsthand what it's like to be on the receiving end of speech therapy services after experiencing a sudden onset critical illness that they didn't know what was for quite a while. It left her with limb and neck paralysis, as well as a PEG tube and a tracheostomy. That's what made her speechless. She was thrown into the rehab world after being an independent, healthy, and vibrant young mother, wife, and speech language pathologist. Through many swallow studies, voice therapy, OT, and PT, she's had to learn to eat, talk, and move again. Her goal is now to help critically ill patients cope with the grief that they experience after a critical illness, and through speaking up about the topics of things such as post-intensive care syndrome, depression, and anxiety. She wants to educate families and patients and the general population about the various rehab modalities that have been successful for her. Such an important perspective. So welcome to this episode of The Missing Link for SLPs. This is part of the Speechless SLP series. I would love to take this opportunity to introduce you to Vanessa Abraham, the Speechless SLP. Welcome, Vanessa, to our whole entire Speechless series.
Thank you for inviting me, Nai. This is a dream come true. It really is.
You and I are embarking on a 12-course series. It's not 12-course, 12-episode series. And it's a dream for me as well, because I want my podcast to mean something and to share stories with other SLPs. And you really, really have a story. Tell us a little bit before we hear why you're called the Speechless SLP. What is your big why of being an SLP, and how did you get started in our field?
That's a really great question. I would say that the seed was originally planted by my mom. She worked in the schools for many years, I think probably close to 20 before she retired. And she's kind of what, right, like I said, where the seed was planted. I started thinking, maybe special ed teacher. She worked in special ed. Thinking special ed teacher, one thing led to the next, and I got introduced to the field of speech pathology. I did some observations in both the school and the medical setting, and honestly, I was more attracted and fascinated by the idea of working with individuals in the medical field. I thought the thought of helping others with brain injuries and swallowings, things that we take for granted would be very, very rewarding. And it's funny because that's kind of the route that I was leading, and it wasn't until I got married and married a husband. My husband, he's in the golf profession, and we travel a lot. We are gone in the summers. And that's kind of how I fell into the school side of it all, because of the schedule. The schedule is very flexible. Mm-hmm. And then once I got into the school settings, I thought, you know what? I kind of like this. This is a good place for me. It's a good place for my family. The schedule was great. I liked working with kids with autism. The more I got involved in the career, the more I I found a niche working with adolescents. That's kind of where I've been ever since.
It's a great story because often when I work with grad students, they're like, and even not just grad students, people are like, where do I want to go with my career, medical or school? And you can have both.
Yeah.
You can work possibly not at the same time as easily, but our field is so diverse and dynamic.
Well, it's interesting because I started out with preschool, little kids, and I was terrified of the middle school, high school population.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finally started working with them, I thought, wow, this is where I belong. I love that transition component. Mm-hmm. I love working on functional life skills. And I haven't gone back to little kids since then. I think that's probably why I was more intrigued too of working with adults in the medical setting. And this is kind of, you know, they're more on the adult route. I'm working on some of those functional life skills, helping them with job placement, things like that. So, like I said, that's where I've been ever since, and I totally love it.
Excellent. Excellent. It's nice to have a job where you're rewarded like that. Mm-hmm. So how many years have you been working as a speech pathologist?
I started out as an SLPA, speech pathology assistant. And that's kind of how I got my foot in the door. I got in that realm, worked in the schools there, did that for about 5 or 6 years. And then it's been about 10, 11 years or so since I've been an SLP.
So let's take a little, not detour, but let's change our focus just a little bit. You've explained to me why you've become an SLP and how passionate and rewarding it is for you. But I also know that you have a whole life where you're a mom and a wife. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about the life before you became speechless.
All right. So before I would say I was like most working moms. I was very, very busy. Very stressed out. I would say at a point too where, you know, I know you've said and talked about in some previous podcasts that, you know, we get to that point as SLPs that we're really burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
I was also very active. I ate very healthy. I was an avid, what would be the term? I went to the gym a lot. I was probably at the gym 4 or 5 days a week. I did a lot of yoga. Before I became speechless, my husband and I would joke around because we lived in a little community where the grocery stores and all of the kids' activities, the malls, the parks were all within walking distance. And I would just always walk to everything with my daughter in a stroller. It was easier and faster than dealing with the car seat and all of that. So I would put her in the car or in the stroller and we would walk to the grocery store. And we always joke that what I wish over all these years, I would have put a pedometer on the stroller to kind of log the miles walking everywhere. In the summers, we would go up to Colorado and I would walk everywhere there with her. I would put her in a baby carrier and I had hiked 10,000 foot mountain peaks with her on my back. I was very, very active.
Very active and very healthy.
Mm-hmm. I never got any illnesses beyond just, you know, your typical cold or sinus infection. But life was very busy. You know, I started off the school year in 2018. Very, very busy time. Beginning of the school year for me is always more stressful than the end. I don't know why, but maybe it's because all the kids are transferring in and we're mm-hmm. trying to get caught up on paperwork. But
mm-hmm.
One thing that I'll remember, too, is right at the very beginning of the school year, we were... there was a conference that we were asked to go to by district because there were a lot of new AAC assessments coming through the district and they wanted us to become certified in doing the assessment process on these students. And honestly, I really didn't want to go. I was so tired. It was the very beginning of the school year. There was so much going on and I thought, oh, I really don't want to go do this. But I went to it. That was at the beginning of the school year, just, you know, stressful period. Then you go from there into the holidays, which is crazy with kids anyways. You know how that can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that period, I think it was about February, actually before that, January, we had a very high-profile case brewing at the school.
And what year is this?
This was 2019.
And this is part of your how you became speechless?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So leading up to February, so we had a very high profile case going on at school that required me to attend a lot of meetings, a lot of talks with attorneys and advocates and all of that stuff that makes the job very, very intense and stressful. And then, you know, I think it was about March, early March, we had our annual speech convention here in the state of California, which I attended, which, again, didn't really want to, but I felt like, oh, I need the points. I really should go. There's going to be a lot of great presenters. I pushed myself to go. Didn't really want to, but, you know, it was just one of those things that on top of the high-profile case,
mm-hmm.
everything going on at school, working mom, my child was busy, you know, toddler years, very busy time, very stressful. So I went to the convention and came home and just collapsed. Something was going on with my body. I think it was just my body telling me, like, you're exhausted, you've hit your limit. I kind of thought that maybe this is just what burnout looked like.
Was it like a switch, or was it a sudden, or was it a gradual onset?
I would say more like a switch.
Okay, and you're wondering if it was burnout or
yeah,
you were coming
I
down with something?
Burnout. Definitely, my body just started feeling weird. Something was just not right. The week progressed, and I just, you know, weird symptoms were going on in my body. I was having a really bad neck ache. My neck felt really stiff. You know, that wasn't a common symptom of having a flu or mm-hmm. a cold, you know, just real stiff neck.
Or burnout.
Yes, yes. So things like that were just red flags to me, but this is just not right. And then I started throwing up. I took a day off of work and then went in one day to attend another one of these high-profile meetings because I didn't mm-hmm. want to miss it. But I went to this meeting without a voice.
So you'd lost your voice?
Yes.
Literally,
I'm a speech pathologist at a high-profile meeting without a voice. So it was kind of like an icebreaker in the meeting that here's a speech pathologist, but she can't talk. Her voice is gone. And I didn't feel well, but I felt like I've got to be at this meeting. You know, of course, as speech pathologists, we're always pushing ourselves,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
putting everything and everyone above our own needs. So I attended this meeting and I didn't feel good. Obviously, I was just whispering my way through it as I was talking about recommended goals and recommended services. I went home and you know, the rest of the week didn't feel good. Woke up in the middle of the night and I had to have my husband take me to ER. I just knew things weren't right at that point. Wasn't getting mm-hmm. better.
And he took you to the ER? This is like unfolding over a week's time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you became more and more concerned, more and more alarmed. Did you reach out to some of your colleagues?
At this point, no. I just figured, you know what, you know, my neck hurting, I figured maybe pinched nerve.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, didn't reach out to any colleagues, just called them sick and just left it at that. But went into ER in the middle of the night. Things just kind of, unfortunately, progressed to the point that I was unconscious. I didn't know what was going on. I had no awareness of what was going on around me. I do recall seeing double. But after that, I just don't remember anything. I was put on heavy doses of medication. And within a day or so, maybe 2 days, was transferred to ICU.
That was, you had red flags, but it seems like it went fast.
Uh-huh.
So I know you're writing a book and your book is going to be called Speechless and there's going to be a lot more details in the book. But you went from working at work, lots of stress, At what point did you ask your, did you realize that I may be burned out, but this is something different? How did you differentiate between that? For those who are listening and say, I don't feel good and I'm stiff and I'm sore. What was your decision-making process or realization process?
I think that point was when I was seeing double. You know, the voice, when I lost my voice, I just thought, oh, you know, that's just some cold. You know, I remember as a teenager and in my 20s, every so often I'd lose my voice and my voice would get raspy too. But I think that was the point that I thought, this is not burnout. This is something more. Like, what could possibly be going on a neurologic level to cause me to be seeing two of everything? And after that point, I don't remember anything.
So you went to emergency room, and then you were in ICU, and you don't remember that. What is the next thing that you do remember?
I remember waking up, being so sedated, not knowing where I was, why I was where I was, in a room that I was unfamiliar with. My anxiety was so high. It was just a surreal feeling, wondering why I'm here. Why can't I talk? I knew I couldn't talk. But I didn't know it was because at this point I was intubated. So it just it progressed when I finally woke up and they started weaning me off of the medication. When I started to realize, wow, this is not good. I'm in not a good state. I'm in an ICU setting and there's machines and tubes around me. And I a week ago was, you know, pushing my daughter in a stroller, going to parks and busy at work.
So was your awareness gradual? Over what amount of time did you become more aware of, I'm in an ICU, I can't talk?
I think it was more than just a gradual, as they weaned me off the medications, that's when I started to become more aware of what was going on. And I saw different providers come into my room. You know, when I saw speech therapists walk into my room and they were weaning me off a lot of the medications, I was very much aware of, wow, I'm not in a good state right now. If speech therapy is coming into my room, along with PT, OT, you know, 6 to 10 different doctors, neurologists, nephrologists, you know, lung doctors, you name it. I knew that this is not good. If I had a common cold, it wouldn't require this team of people.
Right, right. So you're like, I'm in the bed. This is not a good place to be. Sneak preview, some of our future episodes have your physician, one of your physicians, your physical therapist, two of your speech therapists. Who else is coming on to talk with us about your journey?
My nurses will be joining us. You mentioned the speech therapists that were by my side. My physical therapist, they were just so incredible and so encouraging. My doctor has an incredible story to share. He was an incredible person, so kind and so thoughtful and really treated my whole family. We'll get to that when that episode airs, but my mom will be joining us. I'm very, very excited about that. She was a huge part in this entire journey. She really helped my family and my husband, my child.
Your husband's going to be joining us?
Yes, he will be joining us too to talk about the role of a caregiver and how his life was transformed. You know, he was going along with his life, very busy, working 5-6 days a week. March of 2019, that March is usually his busiest month of the entire year in the golf business. And he was abruptly ripped from his career too. He took I don't know, 6-7 months off of his own career to help manage insurance, doctor appointments. So his life, along with mine and my entire family's, was really pretty much flipped upside down in a matter of a week.
And I'm sure other people who have been in intensive care units, that's why your story is so valuable. You give us such a unique perspective, being a speech pathologist, working with AEC devices, and now being in a bed and requiring one, understanding that when a therapy team comes in, all three, that something major has happened and has shifted. What was your perspective of being speechless like? How was that like laying in the bed and not being able to communicate?
The best word I can use to describe that is terrifying. And I don't even know if that word correctly sums up the level of fear that comes from being a speech pathologist and realizing that you can't talk. There is nothing more terrifying than waking up and looking for your AAC device to talk and trying to tell your team what you need by using devices such as alphabet boards and IVs devices. You know, it's indescribable. It's one of those things that you don't learn in grad school. It's not one of those things that's taught in a textbook, what it feels like to need to tell your doctor something or ask a question about your diagnosis or your lack thereof diagnosis. I didn't have a diagnosis. We didn't know what was going on. But I sure wanted to know what my prognosis was. I wanted to know if I was going to be the mom using an AAC device for the rest of her life. I had questions. I wanted to know if I had a future. Would I ever walk again? Would I ever talk again? Would I ever drive? And I couldn't ask these questions. It was terrifying.
I can't imagine.
You don't learn these things in grad school. There's no book until you've walked in the shoes of somebody that's been told that the only way you can communicate right now is through eye gaze.
So if you were a speech pathologist, say your future self is walking back through the door 3-4 years later, which is where you are now, and you can see yourself laying in that bed there, being terrified, what words would your future self give your ICU self?
You know, I was fortunate in the fact that I knew neuroplasticity. I understood that, you know, the brain rewires itself. I understood that it takes time. So when I was in ICU, I kept having to remind myself of that, that I knew even though your brain and your thought process always goes to the negative and you're constantly always having to fight those negative thoughts of, oh, this is my forever. I knew that this wasn't my forever. I kept having to fight those thoughts and tell myself, this isn't forever. This is temporary. But there were many, many sleepless nights. I was in ICU a long period of time. There were many sleepless nights that I'd later thinking, wow, this is my future. But I would want to tell that person in ICU to find hope, find a source of motivation. For me, that was my child.
Very touching. What message would you give the speech pathologists who walked in that door that were working with you from your perspective in the bed?
My speech pathologists were incredible. They were so kind, and I know it was hard on them to treat another SLP. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine walking in and having a fellow colleague laying in that bed and being in a profound situation, very critical situation. I just can't imagine. But I think they were so great in treating my whole family. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing that I would change with the way that they treated me. They took my husband in and provided him with information and literature, and they educated him on what was happening with me. And they were just so, so kind and so gentle. And you know, I'm sure it was difficult on one of my speech pathologists too, because she had a child that was roughly the same age as my own child. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she really had a difficult time seeing that, wow, you know, here's a fellow speech pathologist with a young child. You know, she could be thinking, wow, that could be me laying in bed.
That could be me, right? By the grace of God.
Absolutely. And being able to maintain professionalism, mm-hmm, and do a job and execute a job with fidelity, I don't know how they did what they did, but I'm so grateful for what they did, because they were such gifts from God that when they walk in the room, I was such a sense of relief that I knew, okay, they understand my communication needs because they're speech pathologists.
You just gave me goosebumps on that one.
They know that I need, they know that I'm paralyzed. I can't, you know, type, or they know I need like an alphabet board because I can't talk. But then as soon as my strength started coming back, that I could use a different kind of device. So they were so comforting for us.
What was that like? I kind of get the impression from you that the AAC devices in the medical setting were lacking.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, as I started to gain strength, I needed a different device. You know, the alphabet board wasn't working. Mm-hmm. I needed something a little bit more high tech. I used so many AAC devices in the school setting that I knew what I needed, but I couldn't really communicate that. My team didn't really have access to high-tech devices. So I took it upon myself to download text-to-speech and use that.
Because you're a speech pathologist, you knew to do that.
And it's only because I'm a speech pathologist. Other patients wouldn't take the time to think, wow, you know, maybe I could use a text-to-speech device and download it onto my phone. The only reason I did that is because I was a speech pathologist and I knew what I needed. I knew this is going to help me communicate to my team.
I think one of the most important things that this series is providing and is going to provide is the perspective of what it's like to be the one who's on the receiving end of the services that we provide. That what we do is a job, but it's also who we are. And when we walk into the ICU room or the outpatient waiting room or the school room or classroom or wherever we're working, that ability to see the communication challenges from that person's perspective and being able to put ourselves in their shoes, in their bed, in their seat is paramount in helping us reach the needs of that client with their communication of their basic daily wants and needs.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. It hits home right in my heart too, because, you know, waking up speechless, there's just not a word, like I said, to describe that terrible feeling of, wow, I know what my students and patients over all these years feel like when they have their family next to them, and they, you know, I just wanted to call my daughter on the phone and tell her I was okay. And I couldn't do that. I wanted to call my parents and tell them I was okay, and I couldn't do that. I wanted them all to hear my voice, and I couldn't do that.
I can't imagine. You are so, I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on and sharing this story, because you, like me, want to make a difference in our field. And we will do that through this series and other things that we do. How has this experience changed the way you do your job now as a school-based therapist?
It's changed the way I do my job in profound ways. The first thing I would say is I'm always addressing their mental health. Mm-hmm. That is such a huge part of the overall recovery. Mm-hmm. Their motivation, their want, their desire to want to live. Communication disorders are so debilitating, so isolating. They're embarrassing. It's humiliating at times. And it brings that side of you that you never even thought existed. So I always wonder how my students are doing emotionally. What is their mental state? Are they experiencing suicidal ideation? That is a real thing, communication disorders. You know, it doesn't even matter if you're treating kids in the school setting or the medical setting. I have a lot of adolescents that deal with depression, anxiety, and those are the first things that when I have a student come through my door, that's the first thing I think about. I think about my students with fluency disorders and what it's like for them when they're 15, 16, 17, and they want to ask a girl out.
Mm-hmm.
What does that feel like for them? What kind of anxiety do they have over approaching a girl and asking them to prom? I think about the topic of PICS, post-intensive care syndrome, with our adults that have been in the medical setting. How are they doing emotionally?
Mm-hmm.
Do they want to live? I've lived all these things, so it really hits close to home for me. So that's the first thing when I get a student on my caseload or talk to anybody, even friends or family that are going through critical illness, the first thing I think about is their mental state.
I too am very aware of that field. I speak a lot with NAMI, do a lot of work with NAMI, which is the Nationalized Mental Illness, because the mental illness, it's the body and the soul, the body and the mind connection. And when your body goes through trauma, your mind can also go through the trauma. And one of the ways we can help our bodies and ourselves recover is to be as mentally well as we can be. And I like how you open up the whole perspective of working with the whole student. What's it like asking somebody out to prom when you have these challenges? And taking it a step further, what if they get turned down for prom? So, excellent. I'm excited about this series, Vanessa. I'm so excited.
Me too. It's gonna be very therapeutic for me to talk about it, and I hope other SLPs can learn from it. It's a terribly sad story, but it's going to lead to really good things in the future, and I'm grateful for everybody that's joining me on this journey.
Mm-hmm. Our next episode, we're going to be talking about, it's titled Into the Dark, The Ugly Truth of Being Speechless. We're going to talk about your ICU stay, lack of communication, and your AAC limitations. We're going to talk about all the trials, NG tube, PEG tube, Strider, all of those things that are part of your journey. So I'm looking forward to our recording our next episode.
Thank you so much.
I hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.